Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to The Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome back. I'm here today with Catherine Contos, the retreat boss. Catherine, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
I'm fabulous, as always. You are calling in from Montreal up in Canada.
Oui, oui, Montreal.
Montreal for all you Southern Americans. Montreal.
Yeah. Montreal. Depends where you're from.
Montreal. That's how we would say
Montreal.
It.
Montreal.
That's how we would say it in the South.
That's fantastic, actually. I like that.
You can do that for your Southern Canadians. Have a shirt made up. This is Montreal, just for
Montreal.
That. Montreal.
It would be a great marketing strategy for, you know, Montreal, the city of Montreal, to like place for anybody from the South, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to have an accent driven campaign to see if you can get people high up, to do things up in Montreal.
Well, that's so, a nice plug for my city.
Perfect. Yeah. How can we get more rednecks up in our neck of the woods? So tell us a little bit about who you are and what the retreat boss is.
So my name is Catherine Contos. I am an author, speaker, coach, business coach, and entrepreneur for the past, my goodness, I started my entrepreneurship when I was 23. I'm 49 now. I'm not afraid to say my age. I'm very proud of it, because 9 years ago, I could have lost my life when I suffered. I was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. So I fought that off and continued my entrepreneurship by starting the retreat business. It actually started right before I had just bought an inn and I converted it to a retreat space for addictions and mental illness, like burnouts, that type of, you know, nothing more serious, like nothing. It was like burnouts for corporate people and stuff like that. And as soon as I opened it, I was losing a lot of weight, didn't realize what was going on, got diagnosed with cancer. And then my battle was shifted to fighting for my life. And while I was doing that, as I wrote in my book as well, which was something that became a purpose of mine, is to inform people and maybe inspire people throughout my journey, was I ended up getting divorced during my cancer treatments. I had to shut down my business because there was no way it was just launched. There was no way that such a big project could be run without me. I did all this between treatments, surgeries, and all that. And while I was also losing a lot of stuff, I gained a new business on my laptop in between these treatments. And I shifted the retreat space of this building, this huge building that I had. And I started just creating a marketing strategy where it was being rented out to a large gathering. And I don't know, I hit a special niche at that time that, you know, it was quite new. I didn't even know I could, that it was something that people wanted, but they did. I started reserving. I started hiring my staff. Like I said, I built my website, everything out of my bed. And when I felt better, I would go out and meet my staff who was in charge, my building managers, whoever was there. And that grew. And a couple of years later, it ended up winning an award. So I got the recognition on the news, and then people started looking out for me to do what I did for me. So my competitors, let's say, started hiring me to do what I did for me for them. And I duplicated my success with them. And so that's how it began.
You know, I found all the people with the best stories and the coolest things they do always kind of fell into it by accident. Do you find that to be true?
Yeah.
My podcast journey, often. I was deployed in the Middle East when someone convinced me I should start a podcast.
Really?
Yeah, so it was never my goal or my direction or like, oh yeah, I should really do this. Like, fell into it.
Yeah, because I was also before that, you know, I bought it as real estate as well, right? Because I had always bought real estate. I would flip them, keep them a few years, do what I needed to do with them, sell them, keep some, right? And this was one of the things. I wanted to buy this in and do what I wanted to do with it. And it also meshed in all the stuff that I was doing, which was I was in psychology as well as, so I was a psychotherapist for the people that were coming in. I had a beautiful space. I love helping people. So all of that kind of in my marketing. So all my hats went on that one. And I really enjoyed it. You know, it, like I said, kind of literally fell in my lap on a laptop.
Fell into your laptop. Yeah, absolutely.
On my laptop.
I don't know if I missed this before. Did I know that you were a cancer survivor? Like, I don't think I knew that.
Not sure. I don't always talk about it. I do have a book, like I said, that I wrote about my journey.
What's the name of your book?
Soul Shaker, A Whirlwind Awakening.
Soul Shaker.
I released it a few years after when I was kind of like, this took a good 5 years of like trying to stabilize my life. Because that was a lot of losses all at once. I knew that when I was going through this, I needed to start speaking about it and help others. So that's why I wrote the book. It was a very vulnerable, like put me in a very vulnerable position to write that book. So it's really like it exposed everything about me during that time. But I did it. And it was a difficult book to write because I had to revisit all of that. So cancer survivors, like veterans, do suffer from a PTSD, mostly about recurrence and you know, stuff like that. Severity varies between people, but it's something that when I was writing the book, it was hard. I had to stop a few times. I was traumatized a few times writing it.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I had to stop because there was also stuff I had repressed, I'd forgotten about. And then all of a sudden, you know, the floodgates would open and I'd be like, you know, but I never quit. I never quit. It took me about a year and a half to write it. With a few months breaks in between, twice it happened to me where I had to stop for a few months to recover. And then I was able to write it again. So.
Yeah, that's great. My mom just finished her book called My Sanity Quest, and she's suffered from bipolar disorder with hallucinations and a few other things. And it took her an enormously long time to read. It should come like with a trigger warning on the front, because as soon as you, like, she just dives right in. Do you dive right into your trauma, or you just kind of ease us in a little bit?
I think I dive right into it. I think the first three chapters are the most difficult to read. Because, I just start talking about my story, but people know when they pick it up what it's about.
Yeah.
But it's actually not all sad. A lot of great things. It was actually, I always say yes, I do not want to have suffered that, but I also got a huge gift from that time. I'm not the same person I was like 10 years ago. I'm a purpose-driven person. So that journey created a different perspective that, you know, not many people have unless you've been through something like that. Everything I do, my values in life, everything, the people that surround me, it's very purposeful. There's a reason why people that I have around me are around me. There's a reason why I wake up every morning and what I do during my day. The retreat space, the way I've turned it around is because I want, with every wing that I flap, that bit of air, I wanted to give it to somebody else so they could flap as well and create a butterfly effect of transformation. So that's why now I'm teaching my knowledge and expertise through my online courses on Retreat Boss, where they can create transformational retreats, corporate retreats, whatever it is, and make that little change in every person that goes to these retreats. So that I think instead of hosting a retreat, which it's tremendous, it's incredible. Why not teach more people to do it and just spread that wealth of knowledge and transformation across the world?
Absolutely. I'm a big believer in retreats. In fact, I'm just getting back from a week-long retreat that I did at a ranch in Texas, run by Fletcher Cox. Amazing event. The whole week was just phenomenal. The amount of lessons that we did during the week, and then we did karaoke, and we had live music, and we did a flag football game with an NFL pro. I mean, just like quite the experience.
Yeah.
When grown people play flag football, they forget some things, like they're not as young as they used to be. I'm raising my hand on that one. I'm not as young as I used to be. Like, I got beat up. Like, the earth is a lot harder than I remember. I got knocked down a couple of times, and I won't blame Fletcher Cox directly. But no, we're out playing in the pasture and fairly clean, but there was still some big rocks out there, and I had like a gash in my back.
Oh no.
Looked like someone shot me with a shotgun on my leg. And yes, this is me belly aching and crying, and I'm okay with it. I had ice cream, I'm better now, but
I would be like, please sign this form. I'm not responsible if you choose to participate in this.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. We had to sign some waivers, but I'm okay with that. Tell us about one of the retreats that you helped create that was just in an amazing location.
There's so many beautiful locations across the world that it's hard to choose. It's hard to choose because they're chosen specifically for the purpose of that retreat. So an example would be a culinary retreat in Tuscany, right? Where you have the farm and you could actually choose your vegetables directly from the plant, and you have a chef and you have wine to pair with that food. And he teaches you how to cook with this really fresh food that you chose, right off the farm or even a market, doesn't matter. And then the experience is so much more enhanced than, I don't know, you go somewhere in the city in New York, for example. New York's beautiful, it has its own purpose, but a culinary retreat in New York does not have the same ring as something like that, right? So a retreat like that is just beyond beautiful and an experience that is incredible. And you could pair that, and it has been paired up with wellness included, because you're eating fresh food, and you have a chef in place. And then you could also have a transformational experience with that, with, you know, including wellness, nutrition, whatever, you know, to teach people. Maybe it could be like a place for people who are looking to change their lifestyle with food. An experience like that is amazing. It makes a difference versus, like I said, a New York culinary retreat. Or if you go to Tulum is fascinating for any type of psychedelic retreats, if people are into that.
Where is Tulum? Where is that?
Tulum is near Cancun, Mexico.
Okay.
It is very trendy. It's like the New York of Mexico. Very, very trendy, fashionable. It's known for its retreats. Okay, so you have a lot of people sort of like just a lot of Americans there, actually. I was there a few months ago and it was filled with foreigners. And you have the Mexican police trying to catch them to kick them out. Isn't that funny? Trying to kick out the Americans and the Canadians. We don't want you in Mexico.
The way we behave, I can't blame them. Yeah.
So it would be funny because I'd be visiting retreats. The people that were hosting me, I guess, or guiding me throughout all these spaces, I could hear them talking to the rest of the foreigners saying, hey, the police are at the beach today. Avoid them. They're asking for papers. So it was quite funny to see the reverse side of it. You know, it doesn't make sense. But anyway, so again, you know, like they're known for a lot of their retreats there. It really, really depends on the space. And I want to define something because, you know, people mismatch or they use retreats and vacation kind of the same way, depending which part of the world you are in and also how you define it. In my space, a retreat is a gathering of people during an intensive few days where they immerse you into a program with a specific goal in mind for the group. Okay, so it's not the same thing as a group vacation. A group vacation, you're just probably picking up a destination. You're all going together, having fun, doing whatever you guys feel like doing. But a retreat is really like just with a facilitator, guiding you to create that transformation.
Mm, I got you.
So in case people, and as far as your nonprofit, you know, because we are speaking to nonprofit people here or businesses, it's an incredible way to really create a bond within your people. One of the retreats that I do, which is fully funded, is a retreat for breast cancer survivors. Mm-hmm. It's something that they go to for free and they really need it. They really need it. And it creates a huge impact. And afterwards, they feel like they're not alone, because a lot of times you feel alone in this space. It does create a huge difference in their life and impact. So anybody who wants to do any type of charity style fundraise.
Like, what are the reasons that people want to put together a retreat? And then what are some reasons people would actually say yes to going on a retreat?
Oh my goodness. It is the fastest growing way of travel because of what we've been through in the past couple of years. So people have had to go inwards, and there's a lot of stuff going on in us, and they've been restricted from travel. So imagine being able to go to a retreat where there's so many different programs. Like, there's a list of programs you could be. It could be a business coaching retreat. It could be a life coaching retreat. You know, there's a specific, you know, whoever you follow really, and they decide to do a retreat. If you really like their program and who they are and what they do, then you should go on that retreat, because you will literally get so much value in just a few days that if they know how to plan a retreat properly, you come out of there and you're like, what just happened? I'm not the same person. And that's what I do when I host retreats. Within 2 days, my goal is to have switch that goes on in your brain. You go and you literally see a physical change in the person. You know, they're not the same. If you could do that, that's amazing. That's one of the reasons why you do them. Also for corporate retreats, it's also for, you know, solidifying the company culture, you know, getting the teams to connect better, make sure your vision is all the same throughout the whole company. It's to meet people, because when you're like the president, CEO, whatever you are, you don't necessarily know what's going on with your staff, because, you know, there's it's a way to, you know, you can't possibly know. And you start getting information that you didn't know before, and it actually makes a huge difference in your company. And my goodness, and to scale your business, it is marketing gold.
What do you mean by marketing gold?
You have, let's say you have a 7-day retreat. First of all, people must value who you are and what you do, because they're paying money and time, spending time with you, which is a bigger value to me than money. They're spending 7 days of money of time that they can't get back with you. Okay. So they are ready. You already have them. Which like marketing technique or whatever can you get where people are spending 24/7 with you for 7 days?
Yeah, spending that 168 hours.
Yeah, it doesn't cost you a house, right? Okay, so they're actually paying to come to your retreat for you to be able to even market them your products and services while they're there, because you have them. You have them.
They can't get away, and they've signed up and signed a release that says they're not going to run away on you, and you're not holding them against your will.
So if you want testimonials, guess what? That's the best place to get them. You have them live. You could set up a video, and usually a retreat, people are super happy. They're, you know, because they've disconnected from the rest of the world. There's no distractions. And if you're giving them value, they'll be happy to sit down and make a video of whatever they want to endorse you for. They're all over social media. Weren't you on social media last week saying, oh, check me out. I'm at this retreat, right?
That may or may not be true. You may be able to go check out my social media and see all the great times I was having at the ranch. Yeah. Nothing but great reviews.
Yeah. You can upsell, like, by, if you have a webinar coming up, if you have a book, if you have any products, if you want to get them to sign up for the next retreat, they're there. They're happy to be there. They're having a fantastic time. You know, you're not forcing it on them. Do not make it into a sales thing, but they know you're offering this while you're at the retreat. So they're more likely to buy on the spot. Plus, you know, oh, he's going to go. Oh, I want to go. Let's go together, or let's do this together. It's a great way to scale your business. You know, just with 10 people, you could be making 5 figures with every retreat. Put on 100 people, you could possibly make 6 figures easily with a retreat. So I don't see why not every business is doing this, because it's like, guys, look at what you can do.
Oh, absolutely. When I look at retreats for like the nonprofit setting, I've seen them go a few different ways. I've seen ones just for the board. All the board members, the board of directors goes on a retreat, and they usually bring in a consultant or two or three to talk about different things in different phases and provide different training. And you get that board that is now more cohesive. They understand each other better. They build that really solid relationship that you just really can't build with the day-to-day hustle and bustle going on. So you have their captivated audience. You get time for them to build these relationships, and then they're learning directly from experts in order to help make the organization better. I've seen ones where they do retreats for the volunteers, where they do it for the whole staff. They do it for the staff and the board. There's all sorts of different ways to put this together, to package this for you, your business, your nonprofit, whatever it is you're looking to do in order to create a desired outcome. Because when you have that captivated audience and they're happy and they're relaxed, you can get almost anything accomplished that you need done.
Absolutely. Creativity is incredibly high as well. And on the return, productivity is very high because they're super appreciative. They're relaxed now. They got their creative juices going during the retreat. So they're going to execute everything. And the team feels a lot closer, like you said, whether it's the board of directors or just one team who met another team who's probably working internationally, especially now with a lot of companies going remotely. This is a great way to connect everybody together again. And everybody's on the same track. Let's say they were a little spread out. You know, you can't be as productive unless you put them all on the same road that you want them to be on. Imagine now, you do make 100,000, example, on a retreat and you're a nonprofit. How much good can you do with that money? How much more can you expand your nonprofit and touch many more people with that money? It's a win-win situation. I've never heard of anything like negative about retreats, like unless you go to one who doesn't know what he's doing. And that's where I come in and my business comes in, where I can teach with the online courses on how to create an epic retreat. Or you hire a planner to do this for you. You know, there's nothing negative about it unless you really don't know what you're doing, because you are responsible for, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 50 people, whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's a absolutely. Lot of personalities.
It can be. And if you were on the retreat with me, those people that shall not be named know that I bring a ton of personality to those type of events.
You don't need to tell me that. I already know. I heard.
You heard. Word gets around. Word gets around about Travis. Tell me about an experience that you were a part of that was just a complete train wreck. Tell me what happened. Where were you? What was it about? Things didn't go well.
This was funny, and thank God it ended up funny also, because it could have gone the other way. So we're up north here in Montreal in the mountains in the Laurentians at my venue, and I'm hosting that fully funded retreat that I told you about for breast cancer survivors. So we had some people that came, some facilitators, and they did what they needed to do during the day, and it had snowed like 3 feet of snow that day. It was like there was a huge snowstorm. So it's time for them to leave, and all of a sudden they're stuck. They ain't moving. And where my venue was, there was a cliff. So you have your parking lot and then a cliff. I'm like, oh my God. So all of a sudden, all the girls, they're like, let's go help them. So you saw 10 breast cancer survivors all team up and they're pushing the car. And I'm going, oh my God, this isn't
good. Isn't that one of the benefits of the retreat? Is that not one of the benefits of the retreat?
Yeah. So I started telling you, this is part of team building. and you know, there's a few that obviously can't because of physical issues. So we have, and I'm one of them. I can't because I have a bad arm where I can't do anything really, really heavy. So we're indoors looking at them and I'm just recording everybody and everybody's just like rooting for them. And yeah, they got that car moving. She was gone and we didn't have to call a tow truck or anything like that. So they came in, they were all like pumped and excited. And then we just started dancing. But it was, I'm glad nobody got hurt, but they're all like,
this is a bad experience. A bad experience is high-end teamwork and ends in dancing. That's a bad experience.
if you're good at what you do, you know how to twist things around and make sure it becomes a positive thing. So thankfully, nobody got hurt and they got on their way. And we were sure to like keep in touch with them because the roads were really bad. But everybody came out of it so proud. And it was a great team building kind of thing that was unexpected. That's what's great about retreats, because we're so dynamic. Stuff happens, not only with personalities. You might have people that don't get along, right? That could happen. And you got to know what to do. How do you mitigate this? Yeah, someone could get sick. Someone, you know, there's so many things that could happen, but you got to know what you're doing.
So if someone out there is listening and they want to put a retreat together, what are the things that they need to do or consider in order to put together their own retreat?
So there's a lot of things you have to look at. So it depends on, first of all, you got to have a dream. It's got to be something you're passionate about, right? For you to invest so much time and money and in, you know, days of being at this retreat. So whatever business you're doing, hopefully you're passionate about it and you have a program that you want to deliver. That's the first thing. Second thing is you got to clarify who your niche is, okay, to be able to market them. So you got to do your market research and see what is it that they would jump on when doing a retreat. Okay, what program would it be? What would they be willing to pay for? How much are they willing to spend? What destination would they jump on? So there's a lot of like questions and there's exercises that I make people go through to get to the answers. To that. So once you've defined your mission, your vision, your values, which is pretty much basic business practice when you're launching any type of product, service, or even business. So once you've clarified that, then what you got to do is just figure out, okay, now that I know my niche, I know what they love, I know what I want to do, I know what the goal is of this retreat, how can I enhance it with every choice that I make? And when I mean every choice, I mean every choice. You vet your guests that are going to come in because you want to make sure that they're going to be perfectly suited for this retreat and each other. When you start looking at destinations, activities, what activities are at those destinations, how will that enhance their experience? So they're going to be doing stuff that they don't even know that you've put in place purposely to create the impact that you want. So it's like little micro behaviors that are happening that they're not even aware of, which could be as simple as the food choice you made or an activity was placed at a certain time, rolled out at a certain time during your events that was specifically there to create something maybe for your next thing that you were going to do, right? So it's all about the rollout. It's all about your choices, everything. And you know, you have to have a good plan for your marketing. So you have to have a good timeline for your marketing. You have to have contracts in place with your suppliers and even with your guests. And all of this stuff, you know, if it's an international retreat, you're looking at 9, depending on if you already have people, like meaning followers or whatever, clients, to 12 months. Because people need to plan their retreat, especially if they're going international. They need to plan their money, plan their time, whatever it is, plan their family. If it's a local retreat, I wouldn't do it. And if you have your group already, I would say about 3 months. But if you don't have a group of people following you, I would say 6 months to gather your group at least, maybe even a little more.
Yeah. What changes if you're doing it within your own company or within your own nonprofit?
So the timeline is a little different. So if it's international, again, people still need to plan their time. Okay. If it's already paid for and whatever, you don't need 12 months. That's for sure. So if it's a paid retreat, you just have to figure out your family. It could be quite quick. But availability becomes scarce then. So depending on where you want to go, if it's a popular destination during a high season, you can't do it 3 months before because you're not going to find the venue that you're looking for. And it's going to be very expensive for your company. But if you plan in advance, it's less expensive. You know, you could also pick your season when you want to do it. So it's not so expensive for your company to do it. So you don't go during high season in Europe, which is in the summer months. Maybe do it late September, early October. It's still very warm. The tourists are gone. And you can negotiate with the suppliers, your venues and everything, because they're not fully booked. Off season isn't as great because there's a reason why it's off season. Either the weather isn't great or typhoons are happening. I don't know, whatever it is. If it, you really don't care about what's happening outside and it's going to be kind of like a very indoor retreat, then fine, do it. But if you want to do some outdoor activities and it's off season, well, you'll get a good price. You'll get half the price off. So
it's interesting how you talk about that. Our organization did retreats in the fall, and they did one in late spring. The one they did in the fall was in Vegas, which obviously a lot of people go to Vegas and do conferences and different things. And then the spring one they did at the ranch. And the biggest difference I heard from people that went to both is that the ranch, you can get away from people, but largely you're together, right? And then in Vegas, everyone has a separate room. Everyone is away from each other. There's not a common area. So after the event for the day is over, everyone kind of disperses. So if you're really looking to have a team building event and you're really trying to build those relationships and those connections, I would have to think that someplace like a ranch where you're not really leaving each other to go, you know, see what's down going on the strip today. If you get tickets for some kind of show or you would want to go sit at the poker table for 5 hours, something like a ranch where you're really together and you have places, common areas to hang out with seems to be the better option. Is that your experience?
What you described in Vegas is not a retreat for me. Like, I don't know what the goal was, but it's more of a like corporate, maybe a conference or
a seminar.
Yeah, something like that. It's more like that, right? The spring one that you said at the ranch, yes, a retreat has to be, there has to be a common space. It has to be isolated as much as possible. So if you're doing it at a resort, that's fine. But as long as you have your section, you know, it depends. If it's a resort, it has to be sometimes because it's like 100 people. If it's 10 people, find a venue and be completely isolated. You have to be under a common roof or at least if a common space. So if let's say there's little like cottages, but in the same section, right? And everybody gathers in one common space. That's the only way you're going to build relationships. If you're too busy, you know, going to whatever you're doing shows. And that's just like a vacation or like a seminar. I don't consider that a retreat. And even if you're in that space, so example, you create a retreat at a ranch and you're all under a common roof and the activities are really limited to whatever's there. Maybe you could do something outside. That's fine. But the program is overloaded with activities and you're exhausted at the end of the day, I don't consider that a retreat. You need to actually have the time to process in between whatever activity you're doing. There should be some time where you're able to just not only process in your mind, but your body too, like what's going on, what's happening. It depends obviously on the purpose of the retreat, but there needs to be, it can't be overloaded because then people are exhausted. Their brain's not working properly. They're physically not there. You could get actually a lot more impact with less. So in a retreat, it's not about quantity like a conference. A conference, you're going. There's one speaker, there's another speaker. How much are you retaining by the end of the day? 10%? Maybe? You're exhausted.
You're catching the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes of between breaks.
That's a retreat, actually, less is better. It's about quality versus quantity. So if you're doing something like, okay, it's a retreat where they're learning something. There should be a strategic way of creating that learning where, yeah, they've just spent maybe an hour and a half being taught something. Then the next hour and a half, for example, there should be, I'm just giving an example, meditation, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To walk away from what you've been taught right now is just so you could process. And then you come back to it. You're fresh now. You're whatever. You ate. I don't know. Whatever you did. Now you could start again with another hour and a half of chatting and teaching and learning new strategies. So it's really about quality, trying to figure out how you could get that information in less time and allowing people to process it or do exercises, whatever it is that'll, you know, really solidify what they just learned. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, but when I was in class, when I had a course where it was only the instructor talking, blah, 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 right? For like 3 hours, my eyes were crossed. I tuned out a long time ago. Like I was just daydreaming about my trip to Florida. I don't know, whatever, you know, or my boyfriend at the time. You know, I just completely tuned out. And then it would be like, I'd leave there going, it did nothing for me. I didn't learn anything. People zone out. We're human.
Yeah. Because you weren't engaged.
No. You have to be engaged. And even after, even if you're engaged, that's tiring, right? We have energy that we like give and take. I'm the type of person that after an event, I've given so much of my energy. People really just take the energy that I give because I'm like, if you know me, I'm hyper during an event. I'm like, hey, how's it going? You know, like I'm talking, blah, 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 chatting, laughing. Blah, 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 blah. And then I leave and I'm like, I pass out. My brain's going, zzz, zzz, zzz. It's crashing. You know, I need that time to just decompress. I'm not alone. You know, even if you're not a high energy person, the energy that you are giving to people. You need that. You need to refresh yourself. You need to get that back. So it really is about how you just deliver your program. And you have to keep that in mind. Don't overbook your stuff during the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting. I like that. You time to learn, time to engage, time to decompress and process. And then you repeat the cycle as you go throughout the event. What is your thought on things like team building exercises?
Mm-hmm.
You like them? Don't like them? Team building exercises?
Oh, absolutely. If you know, some of them are kind of like lame.
So what is your favorite team building exercise you've seen?
It depends again on your goal and your mission of your retreat. Okay. So, you know, when we think of team building, we think of corporations going on retreats and doing team building, but team building is the same for me when you're going to a wellness retreat. What you're trying to do with the team building is create bonds, create connection, create like a profound, you know, just icebreaker, you know, like that kind of thing. So team building can be worded very differently depending on what you're doing. And you have to have them, especially day one. There has to be some type of activity, an icebreaker, where you get people to work together to get to know each other really quickly and kind of like just release all their, because they're nervous. They're coming in, they're like, they don't know most of the people usually. Okay, usually. And even if they do, they don't know them at that level. Right. So what are you going to do the moment they come in that will ease them and take away that vulnerability that they feel coming into this place with these people? So absolutely, 100%, you're doing that throughout the entire weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always creating that connection, create it. And it builds trust as well. I'm sure after your last retreat, you came out of there feeling so connected to all these people that you were in. Maybe not all of them, but a lot of them. You got to know them in ways that you'd never thought of or never knew about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what activities were included to team build, but even, you know, this is what happens. So imagine you just keep on enhancing that with these little activities where they're either profoundly sharing something that is very deep and meaningful, or if it's just like an activity where they're just working together, they team up with different people, different personalities, end up being friends that you never thought you'd be friends with a person of that personality that's so different than yours. So that's a successful team building strategy to have. And it, like I said, it didn't have to be like this big, okay, we're doing a team building event. No, it just do it.
But so give us an example of a team building event that you've seen.
So one of the ones, if it's more of a transformation type of thing, there's a fire ceremony you could do. A retreat should always begin before the retreat actually begins, the physical retreat, and it should end after the retreat. There should always be a follow-up, okay? One of the things that you could do is, again, for a transformational retreat, you want to create impact, you want to eliminate the vulnerabilities, get people to be true and authentic, lead themselves, that's the point, is you could tell them, okay, write something down that still to this day causes you pain. Okay, like a trauma, or maybe it could be even an item, like a pencil that somebody gave you that you look at it and it just triggers you, you know, you want to like, right? Or it could be like a story that keeps going on in your head or a vision that really hurt you. So they write it down, maybe they keep a journal for a little bit or whatever. And then they come to the retreat and you tell them that, and they know that this is something that they can share to other people. Mm-hmm. And they will share their journal or that moment or that pen that, you know, they hate so much, you know, because their business partner gave it to them and they ended up getting screwed over by this partner. And every time they look at it, it just triggers them. Okay. That's an example. And you open up a fire, a campfire, a fireplace, whatever it is. And they share what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, it's not easy because you're literally in a room of strangers. And even if you're not in a room of strangers, you're still sharing something that's very painful to you.
Yeah.
And then you go to the fire and you let it go. You burn it. Mm-hmm. And that is your day one of your transformation. So day one begins on the first day of the retreat.
Yeah. I've seen some things similar to this. I've seen it with a board breaking ceremony that you write the things down that are in your way. And then you make sure you write them on the correct orientation on the board. And when you break through that, the break goes through the middle of each of those words. I've seen things like with an arrow, people that put an arrow in their neck and they break through the thing causing them pain. They're 3 feet from their goal and they're trying to get to that. And the only thing stopping them is the mindset that they have, because you can break the arrow. It's very interesting to see the different ways that people, I think, Tony Robbins does walking on coal, hot coals.
Yeah, he does that. He does that at the end of his seminars. I'll tell you why. There's a few reasons. There's psychological reasons for what he does. Yes, it's a thing that, like, if you do, wow, I just did that, right? You feel all great about yourself and whatever. What's happening there is when you have a lot of emotions and excitement happening. Okay, so example. Besides the fire ceremony, let's say you want to date somebody and you really want them to connect with you. The best thing to do is bring them on something really scary, like, I don't know, bungee jumping or whitewater rafting, or I don't know, something that will create that fear and excitement and whatever. So when when you can entice those types of emotions, especially at the end of an event, it forges in their mind how incredibly, like, exciting, and it enhanced, like, they just leave there so pumped and excited about what just happened, even if they weren't that excited about it before. Mm-hmm. It actually tricks your mind to thinking this was, and because it was at the end, this was the most exciting event I've ever been to. It was phenomenal. It was, so he knows that. There's a lot of strategies he uses during his seminars, his talks, that do that, you know, all the dancing and the all that. Okay, it obviously helps oxygen flow to your brain. It's very long, so it creates that break. So the breaks that I was telling you about, so that's what he does. He creates those breaks because there's a lot of speakers during that time and you're creating movement in the body. You're screaming, you're laughing, you're dancing, you're high-fiving people around you. There's a reason for that. Again, it's to trick the mind to thinking that this was the most incredible, because you're literally feeding your dopamine hormone in your brain, which is your pleasure part of your brain. And it doesn't know the difference between winning the lottery and what's happening to your body. There's a lot of excitement happening to your body right now. And it's like, yeah, I love this. Let's do it again. That's why people leave his seminars and they're like, it was the best experience. I'm going to buy it again. I'm already in the next event. That's what you want to do at your retreat.
Yeah.
You want people to want to buy your event the minute it's not even finished. You know, you want them buying into your next retreat. So these are tricks that people know about and include them.
I don't know if I would say tricks, but I know the way that the mind works. And I know that we relate things, and we are the storage bank of our memory. The things that are easily and most vividly recalled are something that's tied to an emotion. If you're studying for an exam and you're not getting yourself into some kind of emotional state, it's hard to put those files in your head into a place they're going to be recalled. They're going to largely fall on the warehouse floor, and you're not going to be able to find it when you need it. So you have to tie this experience to an emotion in order to recall it and really to incorporate it into your life. So if he's not creating those emotions, what are you going to remember? Think about those listening to this. Think about the last time you did a training, the last time that you went to a conference, a seminar, last time you did a retreat, last time you did anything. And you're going to have a hard time remembering something that's not attached to an emotion. You could hear 10 speakers that day and you're not going to remember anything unless they figure out a way to attach it to some kind of feeling that it gets stored in the right folder that's going to allow you to recall that. And people ask me when they meet me in person, like, you are so engaging. You are why are you this way? Like, is there something behind it? I was like, yes, I want to file positive folders in your mind related to me. I want that when you see me, you immediately light up with this energy, that you immediately remember how wonderful it is to be in my presence. Not because I'm any kind of amazing person, but because that I want to be associated with those positive emotions, those positive feelings. So when my name pops up on your phone, you're like, ah, Travis, I can't wait. I've been wanting to talk to him forever. And you hit answer because you attach me to positive experience in your life. And that's what I'm going for. There's too many people out there that try to create negative folders. Every time you talk to them, they're complaining. There's something else wrong with the country, the economy, or the weather, or the presidency, or whatever you saw in the news. And all of those things are attached to negative emotions. So when you see them, they're filing negative folders on you. So when their name pops up on your phone, you're like, ugh.
It's a heavy folder.
Yeah, you don't know if you want to talk to that person, right? And yeah, I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy that when the phone call pops up and you're like, do I want to talk to Travis? You were like, oh man, I can't believe I have something. I'm in the middle of a meeting, but hey, Travis, I would love to talk to you later. Let me call you back here in a couple of hours. I'm just in a meeting right now. I'll call you. Like that's the kind of experience that I want people to have when they associate with me.
Absolutely. And you know, not a lot of times we qualify certain emotions as negative, but sometimes a negative emotion can actually be a positive emotion. So if someone has not cried in 3 years and they come to your retreat and they finally like open up and start crying, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. They just literally just released everything that was going on in there, and they trusted and they became vulnerable. If you're speaking and you trigger people to just tear, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a very positive emotion because they've just realized something about themselves or a situation, whatever. And it gave them that moment of awareness that, oh my God, she's right or he's right. And it just, you know, so some negative emotions are good, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you need to trigger emotions during a retreat, during a speech, whether it's inspiration or it's entertainment because you're making them laugh, or it's a touches like a sad moment that triggered something inside them. And like you said, it attaches that whatever, it solidifies, it fortifies whatever message you were trying to give. So you got to know what your goal is before you head onto that stage or into that retreat or any type of anything you do. Even when you're teaching, you got to teach in a way where, how am I going to make them understand? I just created, actually, I'm a speaker for that's going to be shown in the next few days, an expert speaker on retreats. And they asked me, how can you make it transformational? Like, what's the best strategies of creating transformation in your space? And unfortunately, I can't be there live. So I pre-recorded my talk. And what I did is I did a lot of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to get them into the mood of that story, I placed videos and visions with my voice So 1 minute you're seeing me, and then when I'm teaching something, and then when the story comes up, you no longer see me. You see a video of what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And I know by doing that, first of all, it keeps them interested. They're not just seeing my face for like an hour or whatever.
I could be interested in your face for an hour. I don't know.
Thank you. But, you know, they're seeing like the actual story being played out, and they're imagining. And I actually make them go, like, I make them breathe before that happens. Like, so they could reset. Okay, let's reset. You've just been taught. Let's reset. I'm bringing you on a journey. And I create this journey in their mind. So there's always techniques in getting people to understand and leave with that understanding, and it stays with them. So this is always the purpose, that if you're a teacher, a coach, a retreat expert, whatever you are, a seminar, whatever, is how do I get my message across so they don't go back to work on Monday and they forget about it? That is the goal. You want that message to stay with them for as long as possible. And if you're really good, for life.
Yeah, that's what it's really about, right? With all these things that we do in our lives. And for a long time, my goal was to be the first phone call when something happens, good or bad. I really invested a lot into the people in my circles. A lot of it was time in the military, and really show that I cared for people. And I've had people call me and tell me about a promotion before they've called their wife. I've had people call me and tell me that they're going to have a baby before they let their husband know. I've had people call me, and I almost feel like a little selfish, because like I'm getting this this information.
What do you mean you didn't call me before your wife? Care if the baby was with her?
But it's so interesting, because like when these things happen, when a guy called me, or he came to my room and told, we were deployed, he came to my room and he told me before he called his wife that he got promoted, and I knew it was going to happen. The commanding officer called me ahead of time and like, hey, what's the number to this guy? And I'm like, ah, I know what's going on. And like they call to notify him, and then 2 minutes later, there's a knock at my door, and they're just shaking. They're just so like they can't believe what happened. And he told me that he got meritoriously promoted, just an instant bump to the next rank, to find out before his wife. Like the what goes into that before, you know, that happens, leading up to the cultivation of that. Like you can't beat that. You can't beat that feeling. You can't beat that connection. Like there's nothing you can do. I don't know where I was going with this, but I just wanted to tell that story.
it's a gift. That's a huge gift that somebody gives to you, you know, sharing a moment in their time, the trust that comes mm-hmm. with that, right? It's a gift.
Absolutely.
Again, we're talking about that because we're talking about impacting people. So, you know, when people are doing that with you, it's because you've impacted them mm-hmm. in a way. You've solidified that folder with them in their mind that they want to see you be like, you probably are like that kid that gets like the puppy and starts screaming and jumping, right? You're probably a very like, this is what I see. You're probably someone that really shows their emotions versus like, oh, that's so nice. Thank you. Right. Versus like, woohoo, you know, and jumping and like, or whatever you do, you know, you probably really just bring out all your emotions. And that's fun for people to see and to experience together, especially when they're giving you good news. It's better than congratulations on your new child, on your new one. You know, versus like, I don't know what you do. I'll share my good news one day with you and I'll see how you react, but I'm sure it's epic.
I have got to celebrate with people. There's so many people out there that when you tell them good news, they say congratulations through their teeth, and then they're immediately jealous, or they like, why didn't that happen to me? Or like, there's so many bad things attached to someone else's victory. And like, why on earth is this a thing? Why do I have to figure out who I'm going to call in my phone to celebrate with? It's not going to try to make me feel bad for something good happening. Look, if you're listening to this right now, there is so much terrible garbage that happens to people all day, every day. Mm. And if someone wants to celebrate something with you, go absolutely bananas. Jump up and down, grab them, hold them, scream victory. Please, dear God, can we be a people that celebrate with each other instead of immediately wondering like why we don't have the thing? You're pretending like there's not enough to go around. There is more than enough to go around. Please, dear God, celebrate with your tribe, your family, your friends, whoever you come in contact with. If you feel bad about it, that's on you. That's not on them. Please, dear
exactly.
God, celebrate right. with people.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the thing is, jealousy is kind of like a disease. It doesn't go away. It's something that's instilled in the person, and it's not something that anybody can change but them. And it's very difficult to change. So the only thing you can do as a person who has this great news is tell the people that will celebrate with you. And if they happen to find out while they're, because they're in the room or whatever, and they just, you see that jealousy in their eyes and in their face, that's okay. It's not your problem. You just keep celebrating, because that's their issue, not yours. And you're not going to make it yours. You're going to continue being happy and celebrating your great news. That's how I see it. And to be honest with you, you know, I've had people like that in my life, not anymore. They're still there, but you know, they're not my go-to people when I'm celebrating. And even if I am and they see it on social media, that's okay.
That's right. It is okay. We've talked about a lot of stuff today, Catherine.
Yeah.
We've talked about breast cancer, how you set up your first kind of retreat for breast cancer survivors. We've talked about all the different ways to set up a retreat, all the different steps and things you need to consider, whether you're doing it for yourself as a business or you're doing it within your business or within your nonprofit. We've talked about venues, and we've talked about emotional states and team building and all this wonderful stuff. But you also had something you wanted to talk about for your upcoming masterclass.
Yes, I do have a masterclass that's not going to be a free masterclass. And there's a reason for that. I'm going to charge a minimal fee of $10. And part of that $10 is going to go to fund these breast cancer survivor retreats. So if you're looking to ever start a retreat, create one, plan one, profit from one, whatever it is, this masterclass is the one to be in, because I will be giving part of my course for $10 to teach you how to profit from a retreat, how to price your retreat, the legal implications of a retreat, how to market your retreat. So there's going to be a lot of great information given out to you for almost free. It's going to be happening this summer in July. So if you want to look out for it, you can just subscribe to my newsletter and you'll be the first one to get it. And I'm giving a lot of freebies, including one person's going to get a free course out of it, which value is over $1,200. Yeah, just sign up for the newsletter. And as soon as we have the news out, the dates and all of that, sign up for it and have your chance to get a lot of nice little freebies out of that masterclass.
Where can people sign up for this?
Retreatboss.com. Just sign up with the newsletter at the bottom where it says join our team.
Hey, thanks so much for being our guest today, Catherine. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. I loved speaking with you. You do have a great energy, and I'm going to have a full day of just this positive energy that you just pumped into this space, into my space. So thank you for that.
Hey, my pleasure. If you like what you've heard today and you want to figure out how can I do my own podcast, go to nonprofitarchitect.org/resources. There is a ultimate and complete podcast guide of everything that we do, how we did it. We don't hold anything back. We walk you through step by step of how to do this. And if you need my personal help doing it, we've got a course that's approved at Forbes Business School of Technology. You don't have to be enrolled to take it, but you can take it. You can get college credit and you can transfer it into your college that you're already attending. Thank you so much today.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.